Welcome to Think Bike, the podcast about all things motorcycle and the voice of motorcycle safety and awareness in Alberta. Think Bike is brought to you by the Alberta Motorcycle Safety Society, powered by Moto Canada. Let's ride Canada-wide. Your host is Leanne Langlois.
On today's podcast, we're going to be discussing surviving what I would call a pretty major collision or an incident with my friend Jeff, who is American, so don't mind the accent. We don't have them up here in Canada. I want to introduce Jeff Hallett. He is a film producer and photographer and a friend through my SALT connections. And I'm happy to have you here with us. How are you today?
Hi, Leanne. Good. How are you?
Well,
it's good to be here. Good to talk about what's going on. I appreciate it.
So tell, before we get into motorcycle stuff, I want people to understand you. I know your photography does touch on motorcycles and stuff like that, but you're also a film producer. Tell me a little bit about who Jeff is and some of your accomplishments.
Sure. So I produced and directed a documentary called A Band Called Death. It's available on multiple streaming platforms. We're right in negotiations now for our next deal with it. We were on Draft House Films for many years. The film, basically the quick synopsis is it's three African Americans that formed a proto-punk band in the early 70s. They almost got a very lucrative record deal, and they turned the deal down, that actually sent them into obscurity for 35 years. And, the movie has, gone on Netflix for many years, and also other streaming platforms. And, the guys are actually in the Smithsonian in DC, which is really, really cool. That's kind of like one of my big, I tell people about a lot is that happened in 2016 when the museum opened and we were there with the band. Being part of that was a really special moment. But the film has also won 2013's Audience Award at South by Southwest. So we've done pretty well with it. We've traveled the world, gotten the Library of Congress as well, and a lot of really, really neat stuff with that film. That's my one and only film, but I've kind of worked on some other stuff in the meantime. I just did a music video for a band called Bat out of Richmond, Virginia. So that was a lot of fun to do as well.
I got to see a band called Death. I can't remember if it was through Tubi or Pluto, but I was turned on to that through a mutual friend of ours, Neil Olson from The Salt. We're all connected through Super Rad and the Fez Monkeys and stuff like that. It was a fantastic film. I had never heard of Death before, and so to watch that story unfold, it was really well done, and it was great, and I hope people can try and find it, because it just really is a good story about these three African Americans and this really weird music you don't expect from that culture. It was pretty cool. And then you're
neat. It was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, and then you're also this amazing photographer. Actually, I was just perusing Facebook when I got up earlier and saw all these shots through like your one photography site, that all these still shots of motorcycles and from the salt flats and other areas. What's your favorite thing to shoot?
Right now, my living is actually photography. I'm an IT consultant as well. But I love shooting, I mean, a little bit of everything. Motorcycles, I have a, fond love for, because I'm a rider myself. But I love shooting portraits of people. I travel the country shooting tintype portraits, which is the form of photography from the 1800s. And I specialize in that. And I travel the country doing that. And that's how I make a living right now. I travel in my Sprinter van all over the place doing portraits for folks, doing events. Next week I'm going to Daytona Bike Week, I do a lot of other stuff, doing a cigar festival and whatnot a couple days later. So it's kind of back to back. So just travel around doing that. I love photographing. I photographed as we met in the Salt Flats in Utah. I actually have some of those photographs in a gallery show in Brooklyn, New York, at a place called Sage, and just really excited about doing photography and staying in tune with my creative side, if you will.
Oh, and they're beautiful shots. I wish I could see them in person, and maybe someday I'll have a print for myself from you. What got you into riding? When did you start, and what was your first bike?
So my first bike was a Yamaha XS650. It was '80s, I want to say 86. And I got that in, 98, I think. Yeah, 98. I was working at Burton Snowboards, and there was a few of us that were really interested in riding. And then, you know, of course, riding together later, we kind of formed a group of folks and went riding once I took the safety class. I took the MSF class. Prior to that, I kind of just rode around the block a little bit and just kind of got a feel for riding, but not anywhere on the street. So took the safety class. I actually kept taking some more safety classes as years went on. I went and took the expert class and actually taught a few other friends to ride. We'd set up courses in parking lots and stuff like that and show them the safety from that I learned from those classes. So safety's been a big part of my riding, especially just because it kind of stemmed from an accident that actually when I was a child, someone had an accident. I was probably 10, and there was a guy, his name was Stevie, and he basically was killed because he wasn't wearing a helmet on a dirt bike. So when we were kids, I just remember seeing, I mean, it's kind of gory, but sorry, but seeing the blood in the dirt and just realizing how fragile life is, but B, like, you know, that safety is an important part of the risks that we take and, you know, the procedures that we need to do when we ride motorcycles.
So here's an interesting question on that. I know some states are helmet states and some states have no helmet laws. Like where I'm going to guess, I know where you fall on that, but how would you educate? Like I know Montana for sure is a no helmet state. South Carolina or
no helmet.
How do you educate people on why maybe they should consider that? Cause that's like, we have helmet laws all across Canada. There is one small exemption for people of Sikh faith, are allowed to wear turbans in some provinces instead of helmets. But how would you, as somebody who's so safety conscious, encourage people to think about that? Something as simple as your head.
For me, a lot of education just, is by example. So for me, it would just be me wearing one. If I rode with other folks that didn't wear one, then I mean, it's their choice. I mean, in the States, you know, we have that choice in certain states. So, but for me, I guess just being the best example I can by just me wearing the helmet might be an example to maybe help or educate the person. If someone asks about it, obviously I'll tell them why, just as it's a safety precaution for myself. I also wear boots and gloves and stuff as well when I ride. So, I just, you know, make sure I am as safe as possible because it is, you know, we are out in the wind and in the elements. So, you know, falling off a motorcycle, it's going to happen at some point, whether it's in the parking lot or wherever. So it's better to be prepared, in my opinion.
Absolutely. For me, knock on wood, my experiences have been slow speed skills in gas station parking lots, and my friends just laugh at me as my motorcycle's on top of me. And I'm like, just somebody get my bike off of me. So it's never been, again, knock on wood, I've had close calls, but nothing significant. I'm going to go out of order from kind of what we had, what I had kind of suggested for conversation, just because we're in it. You had a big experience last year, and with all of your safety consciousness, something still happens. Like, what do you remember from that day?
So I don't really remember a lot from that day, cause I kind of blacked out. I did black out, from the impact, but I was told what happened, because luckily there was, a couple folks, that actually were behind me in a pickup truck. And, I was going down I-77, which is in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was heading back to my home in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And a car in front of me, I was going to traveling about 55, 60 is speed limit. And a car in front of me slammed their brakes on. And I, to avoid the incident, I did a high side left maneuver, avoiding the crash. And I was told this part because I blacked out. So I laid the bike down on the left. I flew about 20 feet in the air and tumbled about 50 yards down the interstate. And the bike went about 100 yards down the interstate. I crawled to the median and just kind of propped myself up. And two of the gentlemen that were traveling behind me jumped out of their vehicle and sort of stayed there with me on the side of where the median was. Luckily, I was in the far left-hand lane in a three-lane highway, and I luckily was able to sort of be out of traffic instead of... Luckily, I traveled left instead of right, because I would have been in traffic. I would have crawled into traffic. So luckily, I did go left, and these guys just stayed there with me until EMS got to me. So luckily, they were there to help me. It's actually part of their culture to do that. I actually asked them. I took them out to dinner after the accident, and they told me all about what I just told you, what happened. And in their country, in Colombia, it is, you actually get arrested if you don't actually stop and help someone that's in an accident. You will actually get arrested and thrown in jail and fined if you do not help someone. And I ask, well, did anyone else actually stop to, see what was going on, to just ask or anything? And they said, no one asked. Everyone was taking cell phone pictures and videos of you as you lay there all bloodied on the side of the road. So, yeah, I was like, well, thank God for you guys. I really appreciate you guys, because, they helped save my life. So,
and you were unconscious at that time, or were you somewhat conscious? Well, you crawled to the median, but kind of out of it?
Yeah, definitely out of it. Bloody, very bloody. I broke eight bones. My fingers were mangled. My toe was broken. My arm was broken in half. I had to have surgery and stuff for my arm, and some stitching and everything for my fingers. My fingers are all crooked still.
I remember seeing one of the posts, because we're connected on social media, of you waking up in the hospital with a piece of paper that you had no idea what it was. And can you tell me a little bit about that and the significance behind it?
The piece of paper was the officer's number that was responding to the incident. And it was his number, so I actually gave him a call. He actually was able to connect me, because I actually said who was on the police report, blah, 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 and I wanted to get the police report. And so he was able to give me the police report, but then I was able to then contact the eyewitness who was the guy that was in the truck that was behind me. And I immediately called him, and I, because I didn't remember really much of anything other than waking up in the hospital and the doctors, I was right in the middle of surgery, I guess, and all I remember is them saying, give him more ketamine, because I guess they had knocked me out or whatever at that point, because I was going in and out of consciousness to do the repair on my wrist. So it was almost out of body experience, I guess, because everything was very, all the room was white. I felt like, I don't know, maybe I was out. I don't know, in and out, but it's a very, I guess, spiritual experience, I suppose.
Was the officer then the reason you were able to reconnect with these fine gentlemen from Colombia?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, yeah. That's huge, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was great. I mean, I said, hey, let's go out for dinner. I took him out to, I said, what do you like to eat? You like to eat steak? Sure. So we went to a steakhouse and fed him some food and had a great conversation and made some friends. So it was very good to connect with those guys and really thank them for all the efforts that they did on that day.
I just find it really amazing that everybody else was more in like this rubbernecking mode and just taking pictures and video versus being concerned for someone's life or like blocking traffic or being help of some sort. That's crazy that just these two gentlemen were like the only ones like that. I don't know. Do you think things have changed in the world where people just don't stop and help anymore?
I stop. I talk to others. My friends stop. Everyone that I've talked to about it, they're just like flabbergasted at when I tell them what happened. And, I just say that's, it's very unfortunate that that's what happens. And a lot of people, in a panic or crisis situation, just freeze or don't know what to do. Now it's, hey, let's just take pictures of this situation because, I don't get it. It made me really angry, actually, to be honest with you, that no one even stopped to check on the situation. A few years prior, I had an accident on the other side of the interstate, believe it or not, about 2 miles down the road, coming north instead of going south. And luckily it wasn't too bad of an accident. The bike was totaled, but I was fine. I was on my way to work when I first moved down this way. And no one actually stopped for me whatsoever, which was kind of interesting because I was there for about a little over an hour on the side of the road.
Do you think it's because I stop all the time. Like if I'm on my bike, I will slow down. And if I get a thumbs up, then, then I know they're good. And I keep going. If I'm in my car, I will block traffic. I will get out. I will help. Do you think it's a rider mentality that we just, it's ingrained in us to stop and help versus people who maybe are not, they don't ride, so they don't get it?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of it comes back to, at least for me, the education piece about being educated about riders and the safety of riders, and we need to be very conscious about who's on the road, and really taking actually some of those motorcycle safety classes really makes you aware. I kind of wish it was part of, getting your license was to actually take at least a rider safety class or some part of the class or something, so the awareness is there, because it's more like, you just get in a car and you drive and there's nothing else out there. Well, there's motorcycles out there, there's bicycles, there's people walking, like there, you become very aware when you take an MSF class of how important these things are.
And that's not an American only thing, my friend. Like up here, right. it's the same thing. Like it's something that we consider as a safety organization of at what point do we approach the government to maybe change the driver education a little bit to include a component that teaches you about motorcycle riders as if as a car driver. And then where do we draw the line on mandatory basic rider training safety to get a motorcycle license? It's like trying to find that fine line of not putting in too many rules and regulations, but what is your life worth and that right. understanding. So are there many like education and awareness organizations in the U.S. around you that promote motorcycle safety?
There's the MSF, so the Motorcycle Safety Foundation. That's you know, one. The Harley dealership here where I live actually does safety classes. They do MSF certified classes on Harleys and stuff. That's the one sort of really close to me. But right across the border in North Carolina, there's multiple MSF classes as well. Oh, actually, I think there's the one here is definitely MSF certified, but it's run by Harley Davidson.
So where are you at in your healing process now? You said your fingers are still a little not great, but like, where are you, how are you feeling about everything physically and mentally?
Well, I mean, it's stuff is broken. I kind of just suffer through the pain, I guess, a little bit, but I'm a recovering person, so I never have taken any medicine for this accident, for the pain, other than regular Tylenol and ibuprofen. So I just got through it. I feel like it was a big part of the healing process of just kind of getting through the pain and all that. It wasn't that bad, I guess. And there are thresholds in life that, you know, I would say, oh, well, you know, if it got to that, you know, maybe, you know, take something a little heavier. But for me, it's, you know, I just didn't do it. And just because it's part of my path in recovery. But I'm doing great. I mean, I feel great. I've been traveling a lot, as I said, doing 10 types. The stuff I carry around, the equipment is very heavy. So I have to be mobile. I've been using one arm a lot more than the other because my right arm is my dominant arm is the one that got broken. So, but I'm just doing what I can with little exercises and staying active. You know, I mean, that's the key, to, I think, to recovery anyway. So,
does Jeff get back on a bike?
I filled up both bikes with gas. I'm selling one of them. But my son,
I saw that. Are you going to ride again?
Yeah, I have another bike, but my son wants to ride, so we'll see. We'll see. We're talking about it. So, I'm still very passionate about motorcycles. Hasn't stopped me, I guess, as far as the passion goes. It's just a matter of physically being able to do it. With a broken arm, it's very difficult to twist the throttle. It actually hurts. Yeah. It physically hurts. It hurts me to actually write, even like just signing my name or something like that. I had to fill out some forms for my passport recently, and oh man, it was, there was a lot of forms and it was kind of brutal, but I really felt like, oh man, you know, because I just don't do a lot of writing. Everything's typing nowadays, especially with the profession I do, so.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
So before all of this, where were some of your favorite places to ride and any tips for us Canadians that you might think we should go check out?
Tale of the Dragon is really nice. The mountains there's some going to Asheville, like in and around Asheville in North Carolina. the mountains up there are just incredible. There's a couple other ones that are not, really, I mean, they're on the map obviously, but I can't remember the name of some of them, but they're right in and around, Asheville and heading up that way, and near Hot Springs, there's a really cool one going to Hot Springs. It's like over 100 switchbacks on this one road at like just a few miles or something. It's pretty wild. It's similar to Tale of the Dragon, but it's even a little bit more intense. But it's one of those like unadvertised routes. I can send it to you when I think of it. But anyway,
it must be. Anyway. It's got to be like, yeah. Because you live right there, like right where the Tail of the Dragon is, or fairly close to. Close. Like yeah. lots of touristy traffic for that.
There is. That's why I do the other ones that I can't remember the name of.
Well, then how about we don't tell people what the other ones yeah. are, so we can leave those for you.
Yeah, I'll send them over.
Send it to me, and I'll keep it a secret.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Right. Yeah. People with the inside will get the link. But yeah, there's a couple that are really cool. And then, of course, the beaches, where we're about 2.5 hours from the beach where I live. So that's always awesome. You know, even going to Myrtle Beach and back, or they have a bike week there at Myrtle Beach. And obviously Daytona isn't too far. So
are we going to see you back on are we going to see you back on the Salt Flats, do you think?
I was going out this year, to be honest with you. I had a flight scheduled and I actually flew out there. I flew out to Salt Lake. And I ended up going to Vegas because obviously it got canceled like a week or two before I got the notification, but I already had the plane ticket. So I said, what the heck? I might as well go out there. So that's what I did. I just went out and, you know, and went to Las Vegas and hung out there and went to the Punk Rock Museum. That was cool. Saw a bunch of my friends on the walls there. So that was a lot of fun because I'm a musician as well. So,
well, hopefully cool to, we'll be running in 2024. Dates are up, so you could always book a flight again.
yeah. Be yeah. a good time. I mean, I want to do photography again out there. That would be cool.
Yeah, it's such a amazing place to take pictures at all times of the day, like the night shots and the sunrises, and like, oh, it's such a spectacular background to be in.
It really is.
If anybody wanted to find any of your photography work that you do, where would they find that?
Howler Mano is my Instagram. That's probably the most up to date. That's HOWLERM as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, O. And then, excuse me, that's the same for my website, howlermano.com. And Howler Mano Photography on Facebook.
Awesome. Jeff, thank you so much for helping me out and talking about your story and sharing your experience. We won't get into like how you guys deal with healthcare systems down there because it's so different. So different. But I do appreciate you, sharing that, and hopefully somebody can take something from that all the gear, all the time message, and how you can come out the other side from something that is pretty horrific. And I hope we get to see you at riding again, and I hope I see you at the Salt, and I hope you much more success through all of your recoveries of everything, and all the best to you.
Thank you so much, Leanne. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And for the rest of you, keep listening. The mailbag question is up next. Okay, on today's mailbag, the question is, should someone wear earbuds when riding with music playing? And this came off of a discussion on Facebook, so I can't exactly remember who. But that's okay. It was a really good chat in one of the motorcycle groups. And then I got a DM about it as well. So here's the thing. I ride with music coming through my comm system. And there's a lot of people who would say, well, that's unsafe. You can't hear anything around you. You can't hear your bike. You can't hear traffic. You can't hear sirens. You can't hear horns. I don't ride with music blaring in my helmet. I ride with it very soft as a background type of thing for me. And what that does is it helps me focus. If I'm studying for exams, if I'm working on something really intense for work, I have to have low music in the background because it helps me focus better. So for me personally, that little bit of music in the background in my helmet allows me to focus better on my task at hand, which is riding and making sure I'm safe. Now, that's my opinion and that's my perspective and that's how I function. What's best for you is to understand, do you need to hear everything clearly? Like, do you need that distraction to help you focus? Does that distraction distract you too much that you can't? At the end of the day, whether you're wearing earbuds for music or whatever, please make sure you can hear what is going on around you. That is actually super important when it comes to riding, being aware of your surroundings, being able to hear traffic, being able to hear if something's wrong with your bike. So if you have that music, great. Just please make sure you can hear everything else to some degree. And I hope that makes sense to everybody. But again, that is our show for today. To make sure that you don't miss out on any of our upcoming podcasts or listen to previous ones, make sure you click on subscribe or follow wherever you get yours. If there's a topic you would like us to cover or a guest you think would be great on the show or a question for our mailbag, let us know. You can connect with us on all the socials. Email us at info@ab-amss.org or reach out through our website at ab-amss.org. Always remember to ride smart, ride safe, and think bike. We'll see you out on the road.